En efecto, finalmente pudo llegar aquí y le agradezco por ello. También nos brindará pues un panorama técnico del tema y en efecto, la semana pasada en Seúl pude hablar yo con Karin Perset. Estoy pronunciando bien su nombre. Es alguien que
sí,
viene
Information
de
Computer
ICPC
Policy
Information
Council
Computer
or some committee.
Policy Committee, comité pues de política sobre
right. Of the OECD, who is the editor of the latest report of the OECD. Do we have the copy of this report somewhere printed?
Una copia del informe en algún sitio.
Okay, there are several thick reports with the help of ICANN staff are printed, and including your report of OECD, and will be placed there for your handouts if you haven't gotten them.
Aquí a la entrada de la sala para quienes quieran coger un ejemplar. No oímos a la oradora que habla sin micrófono.
Right. Yeah, but I sent it to the printer yesterday
bien.
And may be available.
Lo llevé pues a reprografía ayer y en principio deberíamos contar con estos ejemplares.
First portion and the second portion part two.
Y luego la segunda
we'll have
parte
myself,
de esta sesión.
I'm sort of officially or formally asked by my government
efecto,
to share their latest findings of the study group. I was not a member of the study group, but I am a member of the follow-up study group on this transition.
Adil
is here. We may miss him.
I've
been looking for his confirmation. You saw
estamos
him.
Esperando su confirmación.
Yeah, so he must be
sí.
coming.
Así es que le han visto, así es que sin duda no tardará mucho en llegar.
If not,
aquí.
We'll have more speakers anyway.
Y si no, bien, contaremos en efecto con más oradores de todas formas.
After the first 60 minutes, the first 20 minutes will be by Ray and the next 40 minutes by three or four speakers, and then after that we'll have a panel discussion for the way forward. What should be done, by whom and when, to ensure end users' interests are protected.
We anticipate
Bertrand de la Chapelle, now he's taking care of the State Minister, will join and share some of his views or their views on the French Ministry as well as that of the GSC, but on personal capacity. We are pleased to have Alan Durand.
Nos complacerá
Alan hasn't
Alan
arrived
Durand.
From Comcast, but he's, I believe, based in Paris often.
He's
from Comcast and
Paris.
On the Internet governance and IPv6 architecture. The Comcast case study was included in the latest OECD's report,
efecto,
so we'll hear their views. As well as we have two ISPs views from Europe. The one is from Mark McFadden of the British Telecom Design, or BT
Design.
And we have Christian, Mr. Christian Jacquerot. From France Telecom R&D, he's the Director of Strategic Program for IP Networks. So they will share their cases on his plans for the transition. Thank you very much. And the other speakers and the participants will join this interactive panel discussion for about 30 minutes. Without further ado, Ray, are you ready to take the floor? Is there any clarification question? Or
alguien necesita alguna aclaración o quiere hacer algún tipo de propuesta.
Lei, you're going to use the slide or
Ray, ¿vas a utilizar las diapositivas, el proyector?
Okay, please. Either
bien,
way.
Adelante.
Probably cable is easier if somebody could help. While we wait, in the ICANN Paris meeting, there are two more workshops around the IPv6. One is for the business tomorrow, or this lunchtime? Yeah. And another day after tomorrow or Wednesday, Thursday, for the registry and registrar. Anyway, it's almost there, right?
Bien, casi estamos listos, ¿verdad?
Good morning. My name is Ray Polzak, as Azumia said. I have a few slides here, but what I'm going to be doing is discussing the contents of a paper that we have prepared for this presentation, which is being passed out to you now.
The
second thing is that there are a lot of what amounts to policy matters in this discussion, and it is not my intent, nor do I intend to permit a real discussion of policy, of the merits of the policies that are being considered here, because the proper place for those discussions are in the various IRR fora. And so instead, this is more of a matter of educating people on the issues. Having said that, there are, as you know, five regional internet registries, and so anyone is welcome to attend any one of these registries fora, either via email or actually in person at one of their meetings, to take part in the policy discussions. Having said that, the composition of this is based upon the outline that Izumi provided earlier, and so the particular issues, questions and issues are ones that he specifically identified. And what I've done here is provided some brief summaries of some ideas and things that are more thematic about what should be discussed in these areas. There's necessarily a little bit of front-end of orientation that's here because of the nature of what was asked to be presented. So without going too much further into that, let us begin. And so the first thing to do is really make sure everyone understands what an IP address is. It's a number. It's all it is. And it provides the Internet protocol itself provides the functions necessary to deliver a package of data from a source through one or more intermediate points called routers to a destination. And this is done by means of an IP address. And it uniquely identifies each of these points. Some characteristics of IP addresses are, and ones that pertain to a lot of discussions going on are these, that they're not commodities, so they can't be bought, sold, rented, traded, etc. If you examine RFC 2008, you will see the concept of a loan concept was defined with regards to the way IP addresses are allocated or assigned. A key issue here is that they are intended to be provided on a non-permanent basis in accordance with policy, and they are then returned to the provider when no longer needed. The policies by which the management of the address space is done is accomplished through a community body. Originally, before the IRRs were established, this was done through a central internet registry, and in essence, the policy body was inside the IETF in specific working groups that from time to time produced RFCs that actually discussed the management of IP addresses, the last and most significant one being RFC 2050. So getting to the matter of globally distributing addresses in an equitable manner, which is one of the things that was said, how is it done? Well, it's done through this hierarchy. At the top of the hierarchy is ICANN. Through its IANA function, it allocates large blocks of address space to the five IRRs. And it does this in accordance with a global policy.
Y aquí veríamos a las cinco
the IRRs, in turn, through policies developed in their regions, either allocate, further allocate smaller blocks of IP addresses to Internet service providers or local Internet registries or national Internet registries, who in turn can further allocate them down to Internet service providers, or these Internet service providers can directly assign them to consumers. Those consumers may be their customers, or it may be their own internal infrastructure. The IRRs also, through the policy process, have identified conditions under which consumers may directly apply for address space from the registry. In most cases, these are large type organizations, typically being universities or large corporations or government agencies and activities, governments themselves. In addition, under the assignments are some special policies, such as those which permit the assigning of small address space to critical infrastructure, such as root servers, Internet exchange points, and in some regions, top-level domain server systems. To summarize, and this table is in the paper, these are the provisioning organizations, who they are, and what their scope of authority is, and what they are capable of doing. So that, in essence, is how addresses are distributed, and the equity of the distribution is based upon the policies that the community decides upon for use. The regions all have particular regional policies. However, if you go to the NRO website, there is a particular document called the Policy Comparison Matrix, which lays out all of the policies in a comparative concordance type manner, in that you will see a particular type of policy characterized, for example, minimum allocation size. And in that, you will see what the characteristics are of the policy of each IRR with regard to that particular topic. So let's get more towards what's the matter at hand here. So regarding the movement from IPv4 to IPv6, this is what was supposed to happen. Bear with me while I'll get up here and talk. I'll have to speak a little louder.
El orador dice que hablará sin micro y hablará más alto, pero desde las cabinas, lamentablemente, no podemos oír en absoluto lo que dice si no habla con micrófono. No podemos oír lo que dice el orador.
Thank you. Okay.
Bien.
This line here,
esta línea que ven aquí,
IANA free pool and the IRR free pools combined. This date is approximately 1999-2000, and this date out here is somewhere around 2010-2011.
I purposely left them off because it's more important to understand what happened here and what was supposed to happen here as opposed to specific dates. But in actuality, the IRR started allocating IPv6
addresses in 1999. So the transition to IPv6 actually started in 1999 in terms of production networks. It didn't start last year or is going to start tomorrow. It started in 1999. Now, what was supposed to happen is that as the Internet grew, the sustaining growth of the Internet was going to be supported by both IPv4 and IPv6. And at some point in time, the dominant protocol on the Internet would change from being an IPv4 protocol to being an IPv6 protocol. And at that time, the substantial growth would be done by the use of IPv6 addresses. Remaining IPv4 addresses would be used to support activities that are required for the infrastructure necessary necessary for the IPv4 and IPv6 networks to coexist and work into the future.
And that's another important point to realize, is that the coexistence of IPv4
and IPv6 began in 1999.
And where it's going to end out here, no one really knows, because we do not know
how long IPv4 networks will continue to operate inside of an IPv6 environment.
And that is really going to be dependent upon markets, what people want to do, and so forth.
But the idea was that there would always be some supply of IPv4 addresses available to support the infrastructure that needed to happen.
And so
the transition would actually end somewhere around here.
Now, that's what was supposed to happen.
And we know that that didn't happen. And so what we can say is that the transition stopped and it's basically failed. Because what has happened is that this curve has stayed the same. For all intents and purposes of argument, we can say the growth of the Internet remains the same. What didn't happen is that the deployment of IPv6 didn't go as what was assumed was going to happen. Now, in the paper, we identify several factors about why this wouldn't happen or didn't happen. But the fact is that we didn't have the connection that was supposed to happen, so that the network transition from being dominated by IPv4 to one being dominated by IPv6.
Esa transición, so what we've actually entered into
is not a transition period, but we've actually entered into what could be characterized as an interregnum period,
a period in which we have to manage
this disparity that has been created because the IPv4 address pool is depleting.
Now, there's two things that we could do.
One is trying to extend the life and increase the supply of IPv4 addresses. In essence, says, take this line and move it this direction.
Or devote additional resources, and most of these are going to be socioeconomic resources,
to move this line to the right, which basically says this is where this line is going to intersect.
You have seven more minutes, if you mind.
Cuenta con siete minutos más. Bien, casi terminado,
but you started me late, though, too.
El señor Zack, pero también empecé un poquito más tarde.
So the problem is, what do we do during this period to maintain stability of the Internet?
That's the problem,
and those are the issues that need to be discussed. Real quickly, for those of you that like numbers, this is what it looked like in December of last year, at the end of December.
And if you look at the
slices of the IPv4/8, this would look like, right now I believe it's somewhere around 40 barbers. Is that what you have?
39.
So, on to issues or questions.
Y ahora pasamos a los asuntos y preguntas que acabe abordar.
Our countries with huge potential growth and or lots of population not being pushed into disadvantageous situations. The first question issue that Azumi raised.
En efecto, se verían aquí impulsados en una situación de desventaja peligrosa.
The question that actually becomes is, what are developing countries going to do in this range,
general,
in this period
que
of time?
En efecto, lidiar con
there are several things to take into consideration. And it's also important to realize that we're not only talking about developing countries, but we're also talking about developing portions of the developed countries themselves.
Rural areas and isolated areas are just as much in the same disadvantageous position as developing countries are.
Now, the means and the resources to solve the problems may be different,
but the problems still exist there as well.
And so, if you look through the paper, you will see that
it makes reference to discussions that says that there are policy
discussions underway that pertain to what can be done to help this infrastructure. And so two things that have to be done is, one, provide the address space so that the infrastructure that's needed to make the interface between the IPv4 and IPv6 networks exist. And also at the same time, there needs to be IPv4 addresses available for new entrants into the Internet business who intend to be IPv6 providers but still will require some
que quieren ser proveedores de IPv6, pero que todavía requieren algún tipo de conexión en IPv4. So which way do they go? Con aquí los problemas de los países en desarrollo.
One,
y se pueden argumentar dos cosas. Que es más barato y más fácil porque contamos con los equipamientos, más fácil empezar con IP4. Pero luego, en efecto, en algún momento en el futuro, se tendrá que realizar esta transición de una red de IP4 a redes de IP6 para poder mantener aquí Internet en la región, algo que va a entrañar costes adicionales en tiempo, recursos, etc.
O otro argumento
es empezar con una arquitectura ya en IP6 entre IP6 y IP4. Se trata aquí de una decisión que se tiene que adoptar, una decisión casi económica y no tanto quizá táctica. Y la segunda cuestión sería,
¿por qué en efecto
no es suficiente, recuperar las direcciones no utilizadas, los bloques de direcciones no utilizadas?
Defer to what's written here, but the bottom line here is that the effort and the cost
en particular, to recover significant aggregate blocks of IPv4 address space to sustain the growth of the Internet para is not garantizar really aquí el crecimiento de Internet no es un esfuerzo que valga la pena hacer, porque el peligro es que
you would possibly be moving to the left.
En efecto,
push the line that's on the other side,
de alguna manera, esa
right
línea
line
que veíamos en el
right
esquema
well.
Antes. También veríamos que se desplazaría en el otro sentido, no ayudaría a solucionar esta situación, este crecimiento de IP4. Y también hay que tener en cuenta, por otro lado, que el mismo monto de dinero, de esfuerzos para hacer estos cambios que permitan el crecimiento del IP4,
en efecto,
probablemente tendrían aquí una equivalencia. Sería lo mismo estos esfuerzos si se invirtieran en el desarrollo del IP6. Se alcanzaría el mismo nivel de inversión.
3 minutos
dice el presidente, habría que plantearse también si no, en efecto, habría el temor de que estas direcciones IP4 que quedan se conviertan en direcciones muy caras de las que la gente quisiera hacer acopio, este tema de la especulación. Se han discutido aquí políticas en 3 de las 5 regiones, se ha intentado lidiar con esta situación.
Y en efecto, entre las distintos
debates de política, lo que se ha abordado es el tipo de regulación, de normativa que se va a adoptar.
En efecto, hay quien dice que los encargados de las regulaciones o las policías están haciendo bien
su trabajo.
Y creo que no son más amateurs que en regulating what they're supposed to be implementing, and the regulators of a government agency or in doing so, because the last time I checked, there's no university that produces a regulator degree. There's no training certificate you can receive that says you are a regulator and so forth.
And the IRRs like government agencies, regulatory agencies, look
for certain characteristics of the people they hire to do the job. So the other half of the story is where does the source of these regulations, this policy, in the cases the government has done through some sort of legislative process or other process that the government has adopted.
In the sports world, it's done through governing bodies.
In the IRRs, it's done through the communities. So here again, these are the people that are using the resource, and so how much amateur are they in trying to determine how to use their resources? So.
Y también cabe preguntarse hasta qué punto la situación por ahora y en cómo se hacen las cosas es adecuada. En efecto, se trataría aquí, como tema de fondo, es controlar esta especulación.
These IP addresses must be usable, they must be routable,
and if they're not routable, they're useless.
And so the involvement of the IRR
as, in effect, a title agency is important because it's only the IRR that can specify
the uniqueness of the address in terms of being related to a specific user.
también con el trabajo, la, digamos, el aval de RIR, esta atribución de RIR, que es la única que puede, digamos, encargarse de esta asignación, de esta validación.
There has certainly been in the past people attempting to buy and sell and trade IP addresses. Perhaps you're aware of something that just popped up on eBay.
It's
not the first time that something like that's popped up on eBay in terms of someone doing this.
Again, it's a matter of usability.
When you receive an address from this person, how usable is it? Are you actually buying a very useful automobile, or are you in fact buying the Brooklyn Bridge?
Five, are the ISP responding to the challenge of IPv4 address pool depletion?
I would say yes, they are. Because of their participation in the policy process, they are concerned. They have businesses to run. And it's a matter of where they think they are in the position.
There are a certain amount of corporate decisions that are required. The upper-level corporate managers are
becoming more and more aware of the situation in their particular businesses.
And so it then becomes
a judgment call on the part of the corporation to do so. Alain
Duran,
who's sitting here from Comcast, will tell you exactly what Comcast is up to in this area. They have made a strategic decision here. So it is a strategic and tactical decision that is made by the ISPs.
Sí que, como vemos, las ISP están tratando y están abordando el asunto y están adoptando decisiones. Y también,
I am wrapping it up as fast as I can.
Por favor, concluya ya. Stop interrupting, please. Sí, lo estoy haciendo lo más rápido que puedo. Por favor, no me interrumpa continuamente.
So what can be done to encourage them? Well, the IRRs are probably doing as much as they can in terms of the communities are doing as much as they can in terms of policy. But most of it now becomes a matter of bodies and organizations outside of the IRR community. Statements by organizations such as the one that Mark McFadden represents, I think he'll maybe be talking about that a little later,
are important.
Statements and activities by governments such as the statements by the government of Japan are important.
Fiat and
policy implementations such as that of the U.S. government are important.
So these are all things that are important.
Statements by bodies such as ICANN are important.
And so therefore,
those are the things that are being done to encouragement and more things that can be done. All the IRRs have increased their outreach activity in this area to increase the awareness in the upper level of corporate management as well as in their government circles. So that is what is being done.
With that, I'll say thank you.
Thank you very much, Ray, and sorry for,
interrupting. But
quick question.
Yes, please.
The
paper that we were discussing is on a table out in the front back there for those who came in late.
So he's up himself, right.
Unfortunately, I did not have time to get it translated, so it is only in my native language, English.
Thank you so much.
And
I'm sure you have many questions, but we have no time for question and answer right now, so please bear until the last panel, and we have perhaps, if all the speakers go within their allocated time, we'll have 20 minutes to discuss.
Ray, could you,
you have a slide, Leslie, right? Could you pass the cable to her?
And
so the next speaker is Leslie Daigle from the Internet Society. She is the Chief Internet Technology Officer and also heavily involved with IETF and other technical activities. So she'll give you the technical overview
for
the coexistence and stuff like that.
And
for those who came late, there are other handouts. I think the staff has prepared that from including OECD report and flyer. So if you can pick them up, that's great.
Creo que el personal tiene sus documentos y quieren ustedes recogerlos. Y quedan sillas libres en la parte trasera de la sala para
todos aquellos
que estén de pie. We have some
more chairs than the IPv4 addresses, I think. Any secondary market, you mean?
Yeah, I just got it. So if it doesn't work, I will display. I got it, so shall I do that, or you got it? Looks like yes. So you have some 10-minute dish.
Sorry for the delay.
Bien, disculpen por el retraso.
So I have a very few moments this morning and an awful lot of ground that could be spoken about, so I would like to just focus on
a few events from the IETF
and the technical world in general, and then touch on how they relate to ensuring that we have end-user interests assured going forward. As you may or may not be aware, there have been a number of recent events in technical fora related to
eventos en los foros técnicos con respecto a IPv6, varios han celebrado este año,
uno
de los reuniones más recientes del IETF, y también estos son los eventos relacionados con los
OIR, los registros sobre IPv6, a nivel internacional,
y todas las decisiones son más concretas que se han tomado basándose en la experiencia de la comunidad.
Some common themes from the public events.
También algunos temas o comunes que se han tratado en los diferentes acontecimientos públicos.
Fair bit of preparation for the events, setting up networks and ensuring
para estos eventos, el establecimiento de redes, garantizar que todos pueden aprender buenas lecciones gracias a esos eventos. Voy a saltarme algunas diapositivas porque realmente la presentación es mucho más corta.
One of the key things focusing on the IETF event is that it actually focuses on a strictly IPv6 world. There was no transition to IPv4
una transición in the network no as it una was set up and operational.
En la red. This is not an attempt to reflect the real world, but rather to reflect real, the world to which we wish to engineer. I think we'd be very up right-hand corner, raised operar, left. Ultimately, we wish to be back in a realm which is not interregnum, but rather globally addressable in a unique address world. To get there, we need to
tener en cuenta que necesitamos ese esfuerzo
have been focused on having that kind
de ingeniería
of, support for both IPv6 and IPv4 in as much of an interoperable
y conseguir un apoyo tanto para IPv4 y IPv6 para que la migración se produzca de la forma más fácil posible. Y son todos temas muy interesantes que se han tratado en diferentes eventos. Creo que los temas principales que se deberían tratar esta semana en el contexto de ICANN son cosas como, por ejemplo, el hecho de que es muy difícil conseguir en algunos registros y registradores elementos concretos con respecto al IPv6
for their own.
Es decir, que la gente se tiene que tomar mucho más en serio el poder o desarrollar IPv6 en sus propias realidades. También es el caso de hacer que IPv4 y IPv6 estén funcionando de forma paralela en un mismo momento. Esto no es simple y bien, tenemos que ver cuáles son los sistemas que están disponibles. Tenemos productos de primera generación y bien, sabemos que cada vez más usuarios de IPv6 y tenemos que hacer que ese protocolo sea operacional.
Yes, one of the things that was
uno de los elementos que fue interesante este año fue justamente uno de los temas tratados en el foro
IPv4 Google made available an IPv6 accessible site.
para hacer que el sitio de Google, por ejemplo, sea accesible con el protocolo en la versión 6. Y lo interesante en esto es que existe toda una serie, una lógica, un razonamiento para decir que IPv4 ya está quedándose obsoleto, que se necesita avanzar, que se necesita aplicar IPv6, que se necesitan más direcciones, o que esto es un problema global y que por el momento que ya sabemos que IPv4 ya no da más de sí, no podemos extender su esperanza de vida y tenemos que realizar esa migración. Todos son conscientes en la comunidad y todos son conscientes que la única opción es la de realizar esa migración. Y esa es la lógica de Google tal y como se presentó al público, y reconocen que esto es lógico y que se aplica también a otros en otros casos, y que para conseguir nuevas direcciones se necesita pues esta migración. Supongo que la presentación se hizo pública y bien, yo recomiendo que la intenten buscar porque corresponde a muchos de los puntos que me hubiera gustado tratar aquí. Me salto muchas de las diapositivas que están aquí porque supongo que no tenemos tiempo para tratarlos de forma pormenorizada, pero diría con respecto a la comunidad técnica, uno de los elementos fundamentales es esa atención que se centra en cuando ya empecemos a desplegar seriamente el IPv6, ser conscientes de que esto es inevitable y que va a producirse grandes cambios en los próximos 12 meses y que todos debemos ponernos manos a la obra.
Gracias.
Muchas gracias, Leslie, por ir tan rápido y hacernos ahorrar tiempo. Una pregunta más. ¿Los usuarios finales tienen que preocuparse, quizás también participar en este proceso de migración? En este momento, los usuarios finales, ya sean individuos o empresas, simplemente deben ser conscientes, conocer, estar al tanto de que esto se está produciendo y así estar preparados para cuando realmente se produzca la migración. Yo no sé cómo uno puede pensar que una empresa no tiene por qué estar al tanto de que se va a producir este cambio a IPv6. Intervención fuera de micrófono. Es una historia muy interesante para ti, Jeff. La semana pasada,
a large US ISP, sat down next to a blind woman on the plane in a class that I wasn't flying in, sadly.
Del protocolo, las adaptaciones que se realizarán con respecto al software, pero sí, y después cómo se harán frente a los problemas que puedan surgir.
Could you pass me the cable so that we can
sí, como me has pasado ya el cable, me puedes pasar
just
el cable, si alguien me lo pasa, si podemos hacer preguntas. La intérprete se disculpa, es una intervención fuera de micrófono y no podemos oír.
The question is the end users, but also the responsibility
for the vendors. La cuestión es saber qué ocurre con los usuarios finales, pero también cuál es la responsabilidad de los vendedores.
Question also centering the CPEs for the end users. It's very hard to obtain.
Yeah, and I would certainly agree that today it would be very hard to say that I want to. I'm going to go home today and I'm going to get my IPv6 set up and make my network work with IPv6. de centros de Internet. Y bien, realmente no hay una respuesta a esto ahora. Lo que debemos dejar claro aquí es que sí, los usuarios van a tener esas demandas y que es algo que tenemos que, a lo que tendremos que responder.
Ray,
y después pasaremos a Karin.
Quickly wanted to bring into focus what we mean when we say end user. I'm sure in most people's mind what they're thinking about is somebody sitting at home with a laptop doing something. And actually, end users in this case are all those people on the edge, whether they be suppliers of information and services or whether they are the consumers of information and services. So certainly those people who are providing mail service or providing banking services or governmental services and so forth are clearly end users as much as those persons on the other side of the edge who are consuming those services. So I think it's very important to note that, and there are specific actions that those suppliers of services that can do in terms of their outward-facing services becoming IPv6 capable as soon as possible that are important.
Thanks, Ray. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Karin Persek from OECD. OECD made a very interesting, comprehensive report and published in May, and many copies
que ha publicado el pasado mes de mayo. Tienen ustedes copias aquí en la sala.
Thanks for inviting me to this workshop to talk about such an important topic as the transition from IPv4 to IPv6. And really what we're talking about here is the future of the Internet and its ability to scale to connect billions of Internet end users and uses and a lot of these new end users and new uses.
Sabiendo que cada vez hay
As Izumi said, I'm from the OECD, which is an intergovernmental organization of 30 member countries. These governments come to the OECD mostly for comparative statistics and data, for analysis, and to cooperate on cross-border issues. So an OECD report, the title is Economic Considerations in the Management of IPv4 and in the Deployment of IPv6, was made public about a month ago.
The goal of the paper is to raise awareness on the need for industry to continue to deploy IPv6
and manage IPv4 given existing economic drivers and barriers, as well as the need for governments to act as early adopters and promoters of IPv6. So the OECD placed this overall theme in the context of a ministerial meeting on the future of the Internet economy. That took place in Seoul, Korea last week, and where some of you were present. Why is the IP address issue relevant to public policy, and therefore why should governments specifically care? Well, first of all, as all other organizations that depend on the Internet, governments do have to face the depletion of IPv4 addresses somewhere around 2010 and 2011, and they have to plan for IPv6. So it's an issue for government institutions just as much as for the private sector, because they need to be able to grow the public services they offer online. Secondly, deploying IPv6 widely on the Internet and beyond just public institutions is necessary to make space available for more use of the Internet and the development of new services, basically for growth and for continued innovation on the Internet. And again, to go back to governments, they care a lot about framework conditions for growth and innovation. In addition, in the future, it's likely that economies that move to IPv6 first will have a competitive edge because they'll have accumulated expertise to develop new products and services that leverage IPv6 functionalities and mostly the widely expanded address space. And thirdly, there are also potentially competition concerns if new entrants cannot gain access to IPv4 addresses. and Ray touched upon this in his introduction. Once we've run out of unallocated IPv4 address space, new entrants will still need to be able to acquire V4 addresses to talk to the V4 world. And the OECD, the organization I work for, is generally very concerned with competition and does view this as a potential problem for open competition. And there are also security and consumer protection issues involved if transfers of previously allocated V4 addresses start to take place, but there is no tracking of what address space is assigned to whom. Today, the RIRs do track the assignments, but that's mainly in the case of assignments of new address space as opposed to transfers of previously allocated ones, and that's an ongoing policy discussion at the RIRs.
But I'm just making the link with public policy concerns. So, en lo que respecta a las políticas públicas. Siguiente diapositiva, por favor.
So the OECD report.
Así pues, en el informe de la OCDE.
Which is a bit long again, sorry about that, basically recommends three roles for governments to play, and I'd like to clarify that government's role, in our view, is not about regulation. The first role we see for governments is to help increase education and awareness of the issue with the private sector. Since the issue is as much a business issue as a technical one, we feel it needs to be more and more on the radar screen of business decision makers, and speakers before me have said this as well. Also, a real challenge during the transition is interoperability between V4 and a V6 internet, and it is in the interest of governments to help promote interoperability so that everyone can talk to everyone else. Governments can also try to help to ease some of the bottlenecks, and I think the report by the Japanese MIT study group on internet smooth transition to IPv6 contains pretty good leads and identifies a lot of the relevant issues and stakeholders. The second role we see for governments is to plan to adopt IPv6 for their internal use and for public services, and that's normal strategic planning, and it also helps increase market demand for IPv6, which has been pretty low, to say the least. And finally, governments need to cooperate internationally, and also it is critical for them to monitor the evolution or to help monitor or to be aware of the monitoring efforts of the evolution of IPv6 deployment. So as an example of international cooperation, and just because this is pretty recent, happened last week, just got back, governments, an OECD ministerial meeting on the future of the internet economy was held last week in Seoul, Korea, and the main outcome of the meeting was the adoption by 45 governments plus the European communities of a declaration, a ministerial declaration, which is a political commitment. It contains a section on IPv6 based on the analytical report we mentioned before, and it says, we declare that to contribute to the development of the internet economy, we will encourage the adoption of the new version of the internet protocol, IPv6, in particular to its timely adoption by governments as well as large private sector users of IPv4 addresses in view of the ongoing IPv4 depletion. So it is a political commitment and it's a start, whatever else you might think about it. Another recent example of international cooperation initiatives is the European Commission Strategy and Action Plan, which is ambitious and concrete and sets a 25 penetration target by 2010. I guess Bertrand Lachapelle will talk about this a little later on.
So, next slide, please.
An important final point that I'd like to make is that monitoring through measurement and statistics is considered by many people actually to be essential for informed policy, be it public policy or technical policy. For example, to meet a target of 25% IPv6 penetration by 2010, the European Commission has set will need to define how to measure IPv6 penetration.
We think it would be good to investigate
what measurements are feasible, who could gather what data to track the deployment of IPv6, what questions would the data be answering, what kind of funding would be necessary, and who would be able to provide such funding, and what methodologies could be put in place so that data that is measured by different parties can be aggregated and compared internationally, and we can have an idea of progress. So moving forward, and the OECD and all the parties, all the stakeholders involved would be really interested in exploring with other interested parties any potential cooperation to help put in place statistical methodologies to measure progress and V6 deployment. And again, our role is probably going to be a limited it really depends on the statistics and the methodologies that answer the right questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Karin. Before moving to the next speaker, that's myself, and just one burning question. Have you done any cost analysis, because it's an economic consideration, how much we're going to have to spend?
El costo de todo este proceso?
What do you mean cost analysis?
¿Qué quieres decir con esto?
What the existing systems are,
what
needs to be upgraded, etc., etc. It's a very difficult question.
I would love to have an answer to that question,
but I don't think
sorry about that. I read in RTI estimated that in the 2005 value of cost for all stakeholders groups to transition to IPv6 in the United States will be approximately $25 billion. It's very rough estimate, and there's a danger, of course, but
I'm
not speaking to that, but to expand on two of the remarks that you made, Karin. First of all, transfer policies already exist in all of the regions, so it's not a new thing. What's new is changing the nature of the transfer policies. The second thing regarding IPv6 penetration studies, Aaron recently conducted one and reported on it at a recent meeting in Denver, and we will be proceeding to continue to do that further. Now, this initial penetration studies are obviously focused on the penetration of IPv6 in the Aaron region, but anyone that's interested in that data could go to the Aaron IPv6 wiki site, which is getipv6.info. And find that information. We are interested in expanding this penetration study, and we're looking for additional partners to help in this endeavor, wherever they may be in the world.
Alain Durand, Comcast. Would like to expand a little bit on the issue of cost.
It really depends on how things are done.
If you plan ahead of time, you can actually roll some of the IPv6 costs into the normal upgrades, normal cycles that you have in your network, and you can dramatically reduce the cost, and essentially it becomes a training cost instead of an equipment replacement cost. So planning is really the key to all this. Now, about $25 billion in the U.S., I don't know where this number is coming from. I can probably put my hat and take another number that will say something after that or twice of that.
Yo me quito el sombrero porque llegar a un cálculo tan exacto es sorprendente.
Yes, well, just one small comment on the fact that governments should be early adopters. It's a good idea indeed, but one has to remember that governments are also content providers to the citizens. And the main issue I hear from the people running these internet services for governments is that they want to give the users the same experience as they have currently with IPv4. And just for the same reason that Google has started a search engine on a specific host name, because they did not want to put the main Google search engine on dual stack due to mostly slow speed for the IPv6 connection for the same reason. It's most government content websites will most probably be put in a specific IPv6 domain name, which means that in the end it will get less exposure than the IPv4 website.
Okay,
now we'd like to move on the case studies. Is Adil finally here? Or? Okay, then, well, anyway, I'll do my part and see how it goes. My name is Izumi Aizu, and I'm at the member of at large advisory committee from Asia-Pacific, but this time I'd like to share some of the findings of the Japanese government study group on the Internet Smooth Transition to IPv6, which started last year in August, I believe, and came up with a final report in April under the public comment, and they have just released an English version and a summary. And I made a summary of the summary. This is the overview of the report. The first 2 points essentially says IPv4 address will run short as early as the beginning of 2011. And to cope with that, the transition to IPv6 is an estimated essential action.
They compared with some other approaches like use of NAT and reclaiming the unused addresses. So,
and the challenges, they have made some action plan, but they say the providers of the networks and service should create an action plan themselves in 2008, this year, for compliance completion by the end of 2010. And it's important for users to advance the supporting IPv6 through the modification of or systems renewal, assuming that internet connection with IPv4 will be limited after 2011. And it is also important for product suppliers such as vendors, manufacturers and technology suppliers, such as SIs, outsourcing to strengthen the support system for network and services. And it is important for government and relevant organizations, such as address administration organizations, to support the whole progress. And this is an overview of the possible influence or consequences of address space exhaustion. And it may become impossible to develop the internet further unless there's some possible measures there. And the services that users receive via the internet are also greatly influenced. And we are dependent on internet so much so that it will be fairly serious. That's the conclusion. And they have compared different approaches, as I said, on utilization NAT and NAPT and reallocation of the IPv4 addresses. And they made some observation about the feasibility, service continuity, and the permanent effect versus short-term
viabilidad
sort of
y también la continuidad and del servicio, así como
only,
la permanencia, pues el efecto y también el último resultado, digamos, consecuencias que es fundamental esta migración
so
al DVD6. Pero ¿cómo hacerlo? Pues
en aquí
hay algunas observaciones de índole más técnica, el cómo ligar, aunar, en efecto, estos dos protocolos para que puedan coexistir
only network
durante
we all know
un periodo
of.
Vemos aquí
and then we
la
need
red
to perhaps set another network called V6 network, but there you have transport, translator, or IPv4 V6 translation plus application layer gateway. As a novice user, I don't know what exactly they mean, but you have to do something to make the intercompatible. Compatible for both. And
pues
in the beginning, there's not much traffic across,
no
and they hope to make more traffic. But in the early stage, they'll be therefore see more use of the NAT and NAP and the translator. And at the middle stage of exhaustion, onto the right, there's more red thick lines, which means the more of the usage of the support of IPv6. They have also analyzed extensively. All these presentations and real full report are already on the ICANN's at large website or wiki website, and we'll perhaps put them all onto the ICANN's meeting, Paris meeting website as well for details. And so they started from the PC and network-connected home appliances like, you know, hard drive recorder. They have some IPv4, but not compatible V4, stuff like that. And they put some analysis on the devices like CPEs. And then these are all for the consumer users, so they also analyze most applications, including voice over IP or streaming or dynamic DNS and the P2P and NTP. But they also looked into the middle scale users, more or less on the corporate users, middle scale, and the large scale users. And they also made some observation about routers and switches, and IDS, IPS, intrusion detection system, or these security measures. And they made more observations about antivirus software to database or this NTP. So these are sort of for most end users, we are not really aware and we don't have to study much about these, but they are the tools which made internet working behind the scenes. And I believe most of these, most of them should be interoperable between the two networks. So here's the action plan. First, they sort of made some demarcation between networks and services and users. And these should be implemented by mostly network services and users, immediate parties primarily. But you need indirect parties. Parties also need to collaborate to solve them together. That's the action plan of 5 years. It's a little bit difficult to see, but from 2008 to 2012, and they assigned the task to each actors, namely networks, services, manufacturers, SIs, users, and others. And finally, the government. I have no time to go into the details, but it could be a template. And finally, they define the role of the government in the action plan. It is extremely important that each player recognize its role and promotes the action for itself, by themselves. So, but for the government, publicize the Japanese policy internationally so that international trends will conform to or conform to. That's the first action they said. So that's part of the reason why I was asked to actually share this presentation today and onwards. No country can really go ahead and then you see, look around and others are not really with you and then it doesn't work. But so international coordination is very important. As Karine said, some of the findings of this report has been fed into the OECD report, I believe. So promote the development of IPv6 compatible supporting communication devices, examine the support for the initial cost burden in cooperation with relevant organizations, and support the enhancement of education programs for engineers to learn the appropriate skills. So these are sort of the details of the action plan.
grandes rasgos los elementos de este plan de acción.
So they have an IPv6 promotion council, but that should be re-strengthened, reconstructed, because they have been primarily involved in the promotion of IPv6 per se, but now they have to also deal with the technical areas and stuff like that. So here's the URL.
That's aquí vemos my la report. Dirección y esta sería la presentación que yo quería hacerles.
URL?
Alguna pregunta muy acuciante.
But it's also on the ICANN wiki website.
Pero como digo, también lo pueden encontrar website, porque ido muy rápido en la página web de ICANN e incluso en el sitio
here?
De esta reunión.
Then we'll sorry next
aquí,
move on to the next part.
Bien,
which is the panel.
Parte
we have Bertrand de la Chapelle
en efecto,
from
la
the French
debate,
Ministry of Foreign Affairs,
de la Chapelle,
and also as a personal capacity
francés.
You come from GSE GAC. Could you sit next to Janet?
Thank you, Bertrand. Al lado de Janet, quizá para intervenir. Gracias, Bertrand.
You have about 5 minutes if you can manage.
Cuenta con
please.
Unos 5 minutos para su intervención, si le parece.
Thanks, Izumi. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Bien, muchas gracias.
I won't take long. I just
Izumi,
wanted to highlight a few points. The first
aquí.
Thing is, it is extremely important
no
that discussions
largo.
Like this take place, and especially that they take place in a truly and fully multi-stakeholder environment. What I mean by multi-stakeholder is that IPv6 or IPv4, IPv6 transition is fundamentally one of those issues that are very, very, very hard to address if each category of actor is addressing it on its own. Everybody has a piece of the puzzle. It's just like trying to build the whole puzzle and everybody has his own piece, but unfortunately the piece he has is not fitting with the other piece he has unless he deals with somebody else who has the link in between. So this kind of discussion, so that there is a common understanding of the objectives, the challenges, and what should be done, is extremely important. And I think ICANN is a good space to do this, and I really commend the at-large in general for fostering this discussion.
Me gustaría aquí manifestar mi agradecimiento a todos, darles la enhorabuena por estos esfuerzos de realizar este encuentro. Y también
the said this morning,
el ministro francés, que ya intervino esta mañana,
ya ha afirmado the term, que but interested and we consider
estamos
important
pues, muy, digamos,
that the allocation of the remaining pool of IPv4 addresses is done as fairly and equitably as possible, taking particularly, into account the need of developing countries or those who haven't been served so well
in the past.
I do not have a precise formula of what fair and equitable is.
It's
just setting an objective that is a common objective in a period where we are going to a situation of increased scarcity.
Atravesando un
so managing scarcity
de escasez, pues,
is, by definition,
este tipo
a policy
de
question.
Periodos, pues,
the originality of this subject
un asunto que
is that,
la política,
unlike some
en efecto,
other subjects, the policy responsibility
temas,
is shared.
Aquí de un tema
it is not only the responsibility of government,
de las políticas es
it is the responsibility
no
also
a los
of the technical actors, it is the responsibility of the commercial sector, it is the responsibility of everybody to come up with a common vision
la de todo
and a common
mundo,
objective. So fair and equitable repartition is potentially a common objective, and
si
we have to discuss what are the best means to do this.
Debatir,
and the last point is fundamentally two last points. The other point is this notion
puntos,
of coexistence
esta,
that you have
that
Izumi has illustrated.
Que ya
I think the notion of smooth transition is
este
a very good formulation.
Suave,
and in those types of subjects, finding the right formulation for the goal is 80% of the work, because if we agree that the notion is smooth transition, that the objective is smooth transition, it is a guideline for most of the things that we want to say. It's not like a switch on, off. It's smooth transition, which is a very different concept. And so the last point is, if we're talking about smooth transition, how do you handle smooth transition? And the few figures or diagrams that Izumi has shown show that basically it involves a lot of different sub-actions by a lot of different actors. And it's not the moment to really outline this.
What I just want to outline is that here again, we're confronted with a typical policy question, which is how do you create a common benefit when each individual action is not immediately beneficiary to you?
En efecto, cada actor, cada parte implicada no se ve directamente beneficiada. Se trata aquí de un tema de una cuestión de política.
But this notion of what kind of mechanisms can we find?
Esta noción, este concepto de qué tipo de mecanismos podríamos encontrar, hay que encontrar de manera que los actores, digamos, individuales, no solo personas individuales, sino también gobiernos en particular y empresas, etcétera, cómo hacer que estos actores, digamos, individuales encuentren algún tipo de acicate o incentivo para hacer algo que no les beneficie directamente, inmediatamente, pero que redunde en beneficio del conjunto, del interés general. En efecto, se trata aquí de un punto teórico, ya que se remonta muy atrás en el tiempo, cómo lograr aquí el interés común, el beneficio común.
Now we have the pleasure to announce the second speaker from France, our hosting country. I think the French are very good. The French are very good at cohabitation.
It
may not be necessarily good for the smooth transition of the administration well. But here, Alan and Duran from Comcast, but I believe you're originally from France.
Sí, vemos aquí a Alain Durand de Comcast, sí, pero supongo que es de Francia también. Sí, provengo de Francia, pero quizá hable yo en inglés.
I would like to first talk about this governance issue that Monsieur de la Chapelle mentioned earlier. One thing that is important is to understand that the system to allocate addresses is a very complex system. It is a fine balance that has been reached after many years of discussion within the IR community.
And
we account that some ill-considered last-minute changes into this model will actually throw this highly evoluted system out of balance. So continuity in these changes is very, very important.
And in Comcast, we do think that the continuity of this internet public governance model within the IR, within the IR structure, is actually the best way to handle those changes.
Now, about IPv6 and deploying IPv6, I would like to share a little bit about the experience that we have had in Comcast over the last few years. The company made a strategic decision to embrace IPv6 back in 2005. We have decided to do it in two phases. The first one is for internal management, essentially using it for own infrastructure. And the second phase is to go on services that will be customer-facing. Right now, we are at the moment where we deploy the phase one, and we are thinking about how to handle the phase two. We try to do it in a way that will not be extremely expensive and that will be actually technically feasible. Because we use technology to solve problems and we don't use technology just for technology's sake. So one of the first tenets of our approach was to say we are going to use IPv6 where it is necessary and nowhere else.
Estamos aquí, utilizaremos
IPv6. There is no point in using IPv6 to communicate between my laptop and my boss laptop. But when we have millions and millions of devices where IP address scarcity is important, using IPv6 is critical. When we deployed it, we realized that it was not so much a networking problem, putting the gear together, that was fairly easy. But it was really a layer 7 and 8 problem, as we say in the technical community, meaning this is an application problem and this is a service problem. We realized that there are lots of dependencies, both internal and external dependencies. And they could be dependencies on a piece of software, or they could be dependencies on a service that we subcontract to another company. And managing all those dependencies is what is difficult. Many, many times when I talk to an external party, they say, oh, we have our IPv6 requirements, we would like this new feature, and the message I get back is, you are the only one asking for it, and I have 21 other requests from many other customers for those IPv4 features, so unless you pay for it,
de demandas así y a menos que se pague por ello, no podemos realizarlo. En efecto, se ha cambiado esto en muchos sectores. Se puede ver este cambio en muchos sectores.
Working with the community, both open source community and the product, to actually make sure that such solutions do exist.
Como,
so vendor engagement, efecto, and by vendor I don't mean only software, but only also services,
pues
is really, really key. And you made a very good point that this is not
este
something that we could do just by ourselves.
No
cooperation with other service providers, cooperation with the rest of the industries, meaning
you are
in the food chain, being suppliers of services, suppliers of products,
proveedores de servicios, de productos, etcétera. Es fundamental.
Now we are moving on to services, and if I may just get your
project,
I would like to show you a picture.
Quisiera mostrarles aquí una imagen.
Because as a good Frenchman, I believe that a picture is worth a thousand words.
Sí, porque en efecto ya se dice que una imagen vale más que mil palabras. Veamos si la podemos ver. Sí, aquí la tenemos.
So this is a diagram that essentially shows what the service provider can do.
And
so
the
service provider at the core that is running out of IPv4 addresses at some point in a few years, and he has customers that are at the bottom, like small home networks that are connected to the network, and right inside things are going to be internet. So what is orange in this diagram is IPv4, what is blue with various shades of blue is IPv6, with various flavors of IPv6.
Well,
we are facing essentially two problems here. The first problem is that in the home, people do not only have the latest and greatest computers, they also have some older computers that cannot work with IPv6. And even if they just bought the latest Windows machine a few months ago, they still have an old one that was working very well, and they expect to use it for another many years. Simply saying, we are going to provide an IPv6 service, it's not going to be a solution. Because we need to handle the legacy. We have to make sure that we keep providing service to older machines and older devices like PlayStation and other home devices. The next issue is that even if we have new IPv6 machines in the home and we provide services to them, well, those eyeballs are looking for content, and the content today is only available in IPv4. It's going to take several years to take the entire content on the internet and to migrate it to IPv6.
Is going to happen,
it's
going to take time.
Meaning that we as a service provider in between need to develop some interim solutions that are going to help us to essentially bridge those two worlds. And essentially it comes back to a technical problem, which is that IPv4 and IPv6 are not compatible. So we are trying to develop some new technologies to make IPv6 backward compatible with IPv4. And this is something we are doing with collaborations with other service providers and other vendors. And we will do that through the standard bodies, something that we want to standardize with the IETF. And this is going to be something extremely important to enable this deployment of IPv6, making it backward compatible with IPv4. And that will be the end of my remarks.
Thank you. So we look forward to hear from you again for your progress on this backbone compatibility at our next workshop, perhaps. And now we have the pleasure to have another speaker, a long-time ICANN-y or ICANN-er, Mark McFadden from the British Telecom across the Strait of Dover.
British Telecom Design.
Thanks. My name is Mark McFadden from ET. Before I get started here, one of the things I wanted to say was just because some of the other speakers have done such a wonderful job outlining what the challenges are and what some of the solutions are, I wanted to mention that BT does indeed have an IPv6 service available. And at the current time, the demand for that service has really not overwhelmed our ability to support it.
That much said,
I want to share some perspective of the kind of thought that's going in a large ISP as far as what is needed to make IPv6 work. Elaine said some very useful things, and I'm going to not repeat some of the things that he said, but sort of share a slightly different perspective. The first question is, One of the things that you'll sometimes hear is that ISPs are not deploying or supporting IPv6. To the contrary, we know that many, many ISPs are already deploying IPv6 in their networks. But one of the things that you've heard and one of the things that is evidentially true is that there's no serious demand for it. So customer demand actually as a market force does drive deployment. Yet we're seeing, at least in Europe, many, many companies actually provide IPv6 service, if not to residential customers and users, as someone talked about earlier in the workshop, than to corporate networks. Remember that not all ISPs are the same. We use the word ISP here in this community and try to think of it as if it's just one thing. But there are many, many different kinds of ISPs and sizes of ISPs. And so one of the things to recognize here is when we talk about ISPs deploying IPv6, we might be talking about small regional ones, very, very large carrier-oriented ones, ones that are only interested in providing NGN-type services, and so forth. And so it's important to know who's providing the access when we're asking the question, do ISPs actually deploy IPv6? It's also important, and I think very, very interesting, in that in a variety of regions around the world, there are some really strong attempts to motivate demand based on non-market principles. And, the OECD paper here is important, but you see governments actually trying to motivate demand in ways that are not related to simple market dynamics. And several speakers, Bertrand did a wonderful job of saying that it's many people's problem, and so many people are going to have to join hands in the solution, and that's what we see here. I think customers are not the only issue, though, and in my last two slides, let me talk a little bit about where I think some of the problems are and some of the challenges are. In BT, we, amongst the people who talk about IPv6, we talk about something called PCNA, provision, content, and applications. And Elaine talked about layer 7 and layer 8. I'm sorry to say this slide is just about layer 7 and layer 8 here. One of the things that is a problem for many large-scale ISPs is that the tools to actually do deployment of IPv6 are not mature yet. That's a fancy word for saying not ready for prime time. And so we're working with vendors. Elaine's words were really excellent here, vendor engagement, to try, and the vendors are very willing and very, very helpful here, but it's not quite ready for prime time, wide-scale, 40 million customer deployments of IPv6. The deployment tools that are very, very mature in the IPv4 world are not really mature in the IPv6 world. Second of all, Elaine, and to some extent Bertrand, has talked about content. My mother fully expects to get the content that she's interested in, and she doesn't want to know about the stack. She doesn't care. And I think that was Jeff Houston's point early on, was that end users, when this moment comes, when we can do deployments of 40 million customers, end users should not have to care about how it works underneath the covers. And my mother, at 78 years old, certainly doesn't want to know. The next part of PCNA is applications. Certainly applications ought to be transport agnostic, or to put into English. The applications shouldn't have to worry about how the packets move back and forth underneath. This is the layer model that Elaine talked about. What we see right now is that some applications are good at this, but other applications are missing. And this is a place where the maturity of the applications developers, again, has to work in cooperation with the content developers and the people who are doing provisioning. Like I said here in my last bullet, I don't want my 78-year-old mother to have to worry about which protocol she's using.
Es decir, que el Thanks, uso Mark. Del protocolo and, sea algo que no sea un problema, que no tengamos que prestar atención a ello. Gracias, Mark, decía el presidente, pero tiene una siguiente diapositiva. Gracias.
I was better than you, Ray. I just got cut off. You got a minute warning there.
The
thing here, and the great thing about coming after Elaine's presentation is I don't have to say many of the excellent things he said. But a very important thing is we think about this and work in partnerships together to solve the IPv6 deployment problem for end users is to remember that ISPs are not a homogeneous community. There are many different kinds, many different sizes, and have many different kinds of problems in terms of actually bringing either pure IPv6 or tunneled IPv4 over IPv6 service to customers. I can tell you that, speaking from the point of view of a large ISP, there is tremendous amounts of work going on in our organization in terms of doing planning for both the architectural design, the service design, and how the retail channel will work with IPv6. And a lot of that work is driven by customer demand. And I might say, and this is something that no one else has said to this so far, but our own internal infrastructure requirements are requiring IPv6 as well. A lot of the discussion that goes on in our organization are how do we go about meeting the operational issues, and Leslie talked about this earlier. How do we actually solve the problem of meeting the operational needs? What things work, what things don't work, and in Elaine's words, which I think are really excellent, making sure that there's some vendor engagement in order to make that work. So Bertrand's point about partnerships is extremely important, and as an ISP, as a large ISP, we found that it's absolutely crucial not to do this by ourselves, but to do this engaged with all the people from both the retail chain, the applications chain, layer 7, and in layer 8, who are stakeholders in the process. Thanks, Zumi.
Thanks, Mark. And to prove that the ISPs are not homogeneous, we have the extra pleasure to have our local host ISP here in Paris. He is, I'm sorry, there's the typo, but Mr. Christopher, I'm sorry, Christian Jacquenet, and he is from the France Telecom R&D, Director of Strategic Program for IP Networks. And before he starts, I was told that we can do some extension because originally it is scheduled to end at 11:30, but we'll have 10 or 15 minutes more with the indulgence. Thank you. And,
15 minutos más para nuestros debates. Christian, adelante, tienes la palabra.
It's very hard for me to be the fourth speaker considering the material that has been disseminated earlier.
I fully agree with the previous comments, obviously.
V6 has been quite a long story within France Telecom since we started back in 1995 with the evaluation of the first commercially available routers. The motivation for such an experience was basically twofold. One, acquire the know-how, and obviously as a consequence, number two, get ready whenever comes the time to deploy IPv6 capabilities in our networks and services based upon the IPv4 address depletion forecast, which remains obviously, from our perspective, the key driver. V6 program, which has been quite recently launched, is actually a three-phase program, which
recentemente un programa en tres pues fases. Contaríamos aquí migración, producción y siempre conservando aquí protegiendo a los usuarios, a los clientes. En efecto, contarían con el nivel adecuado de seguridad y de fiabilidad. Se trataría aquí, en particular, no creemos que vayamos a vender a IPv6, sino que se trataría aquí de una adopción de este protocolo para garantizar que podemos contar con un Internet que sea más rápido y más fiable. No solo por la razón de que se estén agotando las direcciones de IPv4. Y luego vemos que también de distintas perspectivas contamos en particular con tres asuntos técnicos.
En primer lugar es la evolución de las gateways o de los hogares para garantizar que todos los que utilicen Internet con el nuevo protocolo estén protegidos de cualquier acto dañino, cualquier atentado a la seguridad. También estamos reforzando un esquema, un programa de refuerzo También la comunicación que debe establecerse entre los el IPv4 y IPv6, Alan ha mencionado ya esos elementos, también Mark. Y también otra cuestión es la de la evolución o por lo menos el impacto de introducir las capacidades IPv6 en el sistema de información actual, habida cuenta de que se necesitarán ofrecer aplicaciones que estén a la altura del nuevo protocolo. Así pues, esto es los comentarios que podía decir, habida cuenta de lo que se ha dicho antes, y por lo menos estamos ya listos para estas preguntas y respuestas, es lo que podíamos decir. Bien, está después la opinión desde France Telecom. Aquí hay muchos expertos de estas cuestiones, expertos a nivel mundial. También está Lehmann, que es un experto con respecto a las cuestiones de políticas públicas. Tienen ustedes ahora la palabra. Antes de comenzar el debate, debemos tener en consideración que el objetivo es el de crear una sinergia y cómo nosotros como comunidad y cómo con otros, dependiendo de cómo se definen esos otros, podemos encontrar principios que nos hagan reconocer que estamos haciendo frente a un problema común, porque no podemos dejar que sea el mercado quien decida. También se tienen que tomar en consideración los problemas o desafíos técnicos, todas las cuestiones relativas a la seguridad. Bien, pues si todo esto les interesa, no duden en participar en el debate. Hay un micrófono disponible para todos aquellos que quieran intervenir y también a los que están presentes en nuestra reunión, pero por teleconferencia no olviden encender el micrófono.
Come on, please. Yes, Leslie and then Patrick. And
Leslie, Patrick. Sí, solamente quería mencionar que al escuchar las siguientes presentaciones que se han realizado, es importante que, a pesar de que todos queremos que se siga aplicando ese despliegue del IPv6, también debemos recordar que no es posible elaborar el plan perfecto para llegar a ese objetivo. Así no funciona Internet y lo sabemos todos. Algo único de Internet es que es justamente porque esto ocurre y cada uno retoma diferentes aspectos que se llega al final. Al final, en algunos casos iremos muy rápidamente y en otros casos no. Y así pues es muy difícil predecir qué es lo que va a ocurrir. Es muy difícil analizar todos los datos. Para darles un ejemplo de lo que quiero decir, hace unos años la investigación con respecto a cómo se puede publicar todas las estadísticas e informaciones con respecto a la humanidad. Se dijo, eso se puede hacer de forma electrónica y de repente llegó Internet y este problema desapareció porque ya se podía transmitir toda esa información sin problema. Sí, con respecto al mercado residencial, inmobiliario, pues aquí estamos en Montparnasse y parece que estamos en Roland Garros, cada uno enviándose la pelota, diciendo que no hay demanda. Sí, no hay demanda. Un ejemplo, antes de venir a esta reunión, envié un correo al servicio de prensa de mi fabricante de CPS y les dije, esta reunión se va a celebrar y si están interesados, como uno de los principales fabricantes en Europa, pues deberían estar ustedes ahí presentes en esa reunión. Y ni siquiera recibir una respuesta. Y lo único que he conseguido es que otros me hayan contestado, lo sentimos, no podemos soportar IPv6 porque los proveedores de servicios Internet no nos permiten todavía utilizar este protocolo. Así pues, tenemos que conseguir que haya una demanda suficiente tanto por parte de los fabricantes y que los proveedores de servicios de Internet puedan empezar justamente a proveer ese nuevo servicio. Sí, para ampliar los comentarios realizados por Leslie. Vengo de la reunión que se ha celebrado en Nueva York hace un mes y se habló justamente del hecho de que UPI-B6 es el único mecanismo que nos iba a permitir hacer frente a los problemas. Y todos sabemos que no es fácil. Desde el punto de vista funcional, cuando los operadores mismos no pueden conseguir que esto funcione bien, pues esto nos lleva a pensar que las cosas no van a cambiar mucho de aquí a los próximos 2 años. Cuatro intervenciones más en ese orden. Sí, el último comentario. Debemos garantizar que exista una evolución en esta migración entre IPv4 e IPv6 y que IPv6 sea compatible con IPv4. Como ha dicho Metcalf, el valor de la red, esto se multiplica por la raíz al cuadrado del número de usuarios. Ese valor añadido que aportan los usuarios, y debemos reconocer que no hay casi usuarios de IPv6. En primer lugar, debemos crear, generar ese valor y después hacer que los dos protocolos sean compatibles. Sí, yo quería decir que hay dos grandes principales protocolos, es el IPv4 y IPv6, y me gustaría saber cuántas personas están conectadas aquí a IPv6 a través del Wi-Fi aquí. ¿Y cuántos han conseguido? Yo lo he intentado y me dice que no funcionaba la conexión. Yo sí que lo hice, pero hay que codificar las direcciones DNSS del IPv4 para conseguir esa conexión con IPv6. Sí, en una industria desreglamentada como la nuestra, cuando tenemos que hacer frente a un problema difícil. Bien, con los diferentes problemas que se plantean al nivel operativo, que la cadena logística no funciona bien, pues debemos decir que el fallo, la deficiencia es una opción, no es una transición que queríamos que ocurriera. Nadie quiere que nos encontramos en este punto a menos de 2 años del plazo final. Esto es intolerable. Estos días, lo único que funciona en Internet es todo lo que se transmite realmente a través del protocolo actual, y debemos ver que quizás no se va a tolerar la situación y que quizás el problema será cada vez más complejo, pero se encontrarán aplicaciones cada vez más interesantes y que serán los expertos que consigan conectarse al nuevo protocolo. Así pues, hay que también tomar en consideración que esto es, por ejemplo, como negocio. ¿Qué ocurre con todas estas informaciones, todos estos datos que están por Internet? Para quien no me conozca, soy Jeff Houston de es justamente uno de los que tratan todas estas cuestiones de las predicciones. Beltrán, sí, creo que estamos tratando un tema muy interesante. Se trata de una distinción importante entre la planificación y la coordinación. Si no me equivoco, la coordinación es el papel central que desempeña ICANN. La coordinación como fase inicial debe o mancomunar los diferentes actores para llegar a un panorama general. Y en segundo lugar, saber que se pueden hacer muchas cosas para conseguir esa compatibilidad, algo que no se ha hecho antes, y que la noción de coexistencia entre los dos protocolos forman parte de la imagen, de ese panorama. El elemento principal que yo saco de todas las presentaciones es la noción de transparencia para el usuario. Esto es algo fundamental. Los usuarios no deberían preocuparse de saber si ellos se conectan su ordenador a tal o cual protocolo. La mayor parte de los usuarios finales, para ellos esto es más que una aplicación, algo que se les ofrece, un servicio público como la electricidad. Y esto lo quería decir porque justamente el elemento clave de la coordinación es el identificar los objetivos. Y esto es porque una transición sin problemas es la palabra adecuada. Y tenemos muchos aspectos, factores que tomar en consideración. Pero habida cuenta, el problema que está surgiendo y el hecho de que tenemos que de forma colectiva resolver este problema, esto debe convertirse en el objetivo principal de una organización como ICANN. Todas las organizaciones que deben tomar decisiones por su cuenta deben sentirse como parte de la solución del problema, que el objetivo es tal y que eso es lo que queremos conseguir de cara al futuro. Y un sistema, un mundo como el nuestro que está desreglamentado, no solamente es que se trate de sistemas dinámicos o complejos, se debe tomar en consideración que los protocolos hacen que funcione Internet porque tienen la capacidad de escala necesaria para poder transmitir todos los datos y todas las informaciones. Así pues, todos deben participar para conseguir hacer frente a este problema, a esta situación compleja para todos, para que todo el mundo tenga aplicaciones que funcionan, un protocolo que funciona y se ofrezcan aplicaciones, nuevas aplicaciones a los usuarios.
We have two more speakers, but...
Dos oradores más, pero yo creo que han sido los británicos, los franceses y estadounidenses los que han intervenido y nos gustarían intervenciones de otras partes del mundo. Si yo vengo de la otra parte del mundo, vengo de Francia. Y creo que algo fundamental es saber que el usuario final forma parte del el centro de nuestra atención. Y yo debo decir que soy un defensor de IPv6 para que no haya confusión en lo que voy a decir. Durante 10 años he trabajado para desplegar el IPv6 y, sin embargo, como usuario final, todos los días que utilizo el IPv6 en la producción, no puedo resistir a la tentación de compararlo con el IPv6. Y las personas que desplegan el IPv6 deben ser muy cautos para no hacer que se produzcan comparaciones que pueden ir en detrimento del IPv6 en la actualidad. En cuanto se encuentra un problema, se van a los foros, los usuarios, y la solución que reciben es elimina IPv6 debido a la mala calidad de las redes de producción. Nosotros, como los que nos encargamos del despliegue del IPv6, debemos asumir la responsabilidad de no hacer que IPv6 se convierta en un ciudadano de segunda clase. IPv6 debe desplegarse en un mismo nivel de calidad que IPv4, porque lo que se necesitaría es decir que está en construcción, en curso, se está realizando pruebas con respecto al protocolo sería adecuado, porque si se dice que ya funciona, los usuarios van a solicitar IPv6 y va a haber problemas. Yo creo que algunos usuarios ya nos han mostrado que necesitamos ir probando el protocolo. Bien, vengo de la Escuela de Economía de Londres. Si quería retomar ese comentario de Leslie con respecto a sabemos cuál es el objetivo que queremos conseguir, pero que no existe el plan perfecto para conseguirlo, pero es así como funciona Internet. Y me gustaría saber si realmente hay una única vía con respecto al funcionamiento de Internet. Yo creo que hay muchas opciones. A mí lo que me sorprende es que todos los intentos por coordinar las comunidades técnicas que nos permitan solucionar este problema no parecen ser intentos que estén dando buenos resultados. La capacidad de Internet es tan baja que esto no puede cambiarse, no se puede solucionar el problema. Me gustaría saber si todos estos intentos para llegar a los IRRs, ¿por qué se ha llegado tan tarde a esta solución? ¿Por qué no empezó esto hace 10 años, cuando ya el IPv6 estaba listo para su despliegue? Los proveedores, ¿por qué no han empezado hace 10 años ya a desplegar IPv6? No hay una aplicación específica para IPv6. Así pues, yo creo que eso es algo que me sorprende mucho. Gracias.
Let's move on, Frank, and then hear the answer.
Frank, y después pasamos a las respuestas. Sí. Me gustaría saber a dónde vamos. Soy francés y vengo de la región Asia-Pacífico. Y bien, quería saber a dónde vamos a ir de cara al futuro. ¿Cuándo se va a acabar con este? ¿Cuándo acabará IPv4? Sé que en un momento va a finalizar porque ya no tendremos más direcciones en ese protocolo. Pero veo que las recomendaciones de la Unión Europea, de la OCDE, nos dicen que si no se realiza la migración se van a perder oportunidades económicas. Entonces, a mí me gustaría saber en qué nivel vamos a llegar a ese punto en el que estemos perdiendo oportunidades económicas o porque seguimos en IPv4 y ya IPv4 no da más de sí. Y llegará un momento, pues entonces, que nuestras economías tendrán que decir este será el día final, el plazo final, a partir del cual tendremos que empezar a utilizar IPv6. Me gustaría saber cuál es ese plazo, ese horizonte, porque para ver las cosas más claras. Toma, también tiene la palabra.
¿Es on? Just a couple of comments. Un
par de comentarios. Yo pienso que todo se reduce a la demanda. La demanda es lo que soluciona todo. Y en ausencia de demanda no podemos hacer mucho. El problema no es saber cómo los interlocutores se coordinan. Lo importante es que los usuarios o los clientes no están interesados. Y si cada vez se fomenta más la demanda, bien, pues se conseguirá avanzar. No va a ocurrir ahora. Creo que todavía nos quedan 2 o 3 años antes de que el nivel que se alcance sea el adecuado para que los usuarios sepan qué es lo que está ocurriendo, pero realmente no sé cuándo llegaremos a ese nivel que tú pides o con respecto a cuándo se acabará IPv4. Llevamos ya 15 años hablando de estas cuestiones. No es que de repente ahora nos levantemos y digamos, va a haber problemas con respecto al IPv4. Esto se sabía ya desde el día 1, pero fue una decisión a propósito, diciendo que no se pueden contar con 2 tecnologías hoy en la que una va a desaparecer, va a haber un cambio y que la otra no esté preparada. Hace 15 años sabíamos que la nueva versión tenía que soportar la antigua versión y que ambas debían ser compatibles. Y en eso se basa el dual stacking. Sí, gracias. Él está miembro de la mesa del ICAM y enlace con el IETF. 2 comentarios más adelante. Y vamos a finalizar muy pronto. Sí, muchas gracias. Vengo de la Comisión de Unidad Africana. El problema de la migración de IPv4 a IPv6, o bien simplemente se trata de una cuestión de demanda, concienciación, sensibilización y consecuencias. Y desde el año 2000, cuando se pensaba que íbamos a tener ese gran problema en que toda la red se iba a colapsar el día 1 de enero del 2000 y después vimos que no, bien, pues todas estas presentaciones nos están hablando del año 2010 y el 2011 para conseguir esa migración de IPv4 a IPv6. A mí me gustaría saber si se va a producir de nuevo el bug del 2000 en el 2010 o en el 2011. Sí, he escuchado esa pregunta de ¿por qué esto no es la misma situación que en el 2000? Mi respuesta sería sí. Es una situación similar porque se tienen que revisar todas las aplicaciones y todos los elementos para garantizar que todo funciona, pero no se va a producir un colapsamiento, es decir, que nos vamos a despertar y que no va a funcionar. Eso no ocurrió en el 2000 y no va a ocurrir. Nada, las cosas cambian continuamente. Y se trata simplemente de ver cómo funcionan las cosas y si todo funciona bien, pero es complicado entender dónde se van a producir los puntos álgidos, digamos, en cuanto a las complicaciones. Estamos intentando actualizar, mejorar una infraestructura que es utilizada por 1.400 millones de personas. Es muy difícil aplicar todos los cambios en una infraestructura de esa capacidad. Unos segundos. Sí. Una lección importante que debemos aprender del bug del 2000 fue que hubo un gran esfuerzo que se desplegó para poder hacer frente a ese acontecimiento y que por eso al final no tuvo tantas consecuencias. Bien, vengo de Kenia. Y he sido una de las personas que ha participado en el despliegue del IPv6 en mi país y en África en general. Y debo decir que uno de los desafíos más importantes a los que hemos hecho frente en este despliegue es que justamente no podemos conseguir que el IPv6 nativo se aplique en África. Debemos utilizar diferentes pasarelas. Los gobiernos están justamente presionando para que se despliegue el IPv6. Hay una gran creación de capacidades como resultado de las diferentes actividades que se emprenden con respecto a esta cuestión. Pero vemos que hay tres puntos en los que se está desplegando el IPv6, pero los miembros no consiguen desplegarlo realmente en toda la región. Y los operadores, ya sean europeos o americanos y que nos estén ayudando, nos damos cuenta que no conseguimos hacerlo de forma adecuada. Y mi pregunta sería decir si África tiene muy poco tráfico. De hecho, no tenemos suficiente tráfico como para que nos financien este despliegue. Pero debemos realmente avanzar. Debemos saber qué es lo que podemos hacer para desplegar realmente el IPv6. Ya ha llegado a África en los próximos 12-18 meses. Va a seguir este despliegue, pero tenemos que saber cómo avanzar. ¿Alguien quiere responder muy rápidamente a esta pregunta? Bien, o quizás tienen una nueva pregunta. Señora, adelante. Yo voy a dejar que los intérpretes trabajen un poco. Así que, pues, por favor, pongan ustedes sus cascos, porque yo voy a hablar en francés. Bien, no tengo mucho que decir, porque mi compañero de Kenia ha puesto ya el dedo en la llaga. Estamos todos de acuerdo con el hecho de que el despliegue del IPv6 depende de la demanda. Todos sabemos que en África no hay mucho tráfico y que estamos muy, muy, muy lejos de poder agotar las direcciones de IPv4. Así pues, cabe preguntarse por qué África va a comenzar a invertir grandes cantidades de dinero para prepararse a la llegada del UPV6. Se trata de ponerse a la altura, de prepararse a ese proceso de mundialización que exige que todos estemos en el mismo nivel. Bien, como ya lo dije ayer, es una lástima que, como mi compañero acaba de decir, tengamos que decir qué podemos hacer para África, pero yo creo que somos nosotros los africanos los que tenemos que sacarnos las castañas del fuego y venir a estos seminarios para ver qué es lo que está ocurriendo en otros países. Pero en la actualidad la demanda no puede ser importante en la medida en la que los africanos, el sector privado africano, no puede realmente aprovecharse de los servicios que se van a ofrecer, porque los usuarios finales no ven por qué utilizar ese protocolo. Si no existe demanda, ¿para qué invertir, para qué gastar dinero en el UPV6? Porque esto sería de nuevo un trozo del pastel para el sector privado, el sector internacional y extranjero. Sí, muchas gracias para todos los... Como yo no he tenido los cascos, voy a hacer que mi compañero traduzca rápida y brevemente lo que ha dicho. Está repitiendo exactamente lo que acaba de decir la señora.
Oh, and the demand is not there. How about try to summarize very shortly your point?
Thank you very much. Anybody dare to answer?
¿Alguien quisiera responder o se trata de un desafío común? ¿Alguien de AfriNIC estaría aquí? No sé, ¿no? No sé si hay algún comentario así que tengan ustedes en la punta de la lengua que no pueden aguantarse. ¿Alguna pregunta? Sí, creo que he olvidado hacer una pregunta. Hemos hablado de los grandes proveedores de servicios que siguen diciendo que los usuarios finales solo entienden IPv4. Y si ese es el caso, bien, no me sorprende porque los proveedores no deberían coordinar los departamentos a nivel interno para poder prepararse al IPv6. Sí, creo que la verdad es aún mucho más complicada. La realidad es que es muy complicado encontrar proveedores o CPEs, perdón, que puedan justamente soportar IPv6. ¿Tomás? ¿Susan? Sí, yo trabajo en IOC, desarrollamos software de infraestructuras y uno de lo que hemos estado haciendo últimamente es que justamente crear un DHCP para la versión 6. Se nos ha dicho que necesitamos que nuestros vendedores hagan esto y cuanto más personas de como ICANN vienen a nosotros y nos dicen esta capacidad la necesitamos y después se aporta el dinero, bien, pues es mucho más fácil hacer todo. Pero se tiene que dar cuenta uno de lo que se necesita una planificación y después pues ponerse manos a la obra. Sí, lo que digo es que sí, está funcionando, pero muy, muy lentamente y que hay muchos problemas. Última intervención. Vengo de la región de África, de Asia-Pacífico, y con respecto a la cuestión de la demanda de los clientes, ha sido una satisfacción escuchar los comentarios de Mark y de Alan con respecto a las cuestiones a nivel interno y desde el punto de vista africano, si asumen que su base de clientes actuales es la que cuenta su... Un negocio ha finalizado. Lo que cuenta es los clientes futuros. Tomás, sí, para dejar las cosas claras, cuando yo hablo de demanda, no se trata de la demanda solo de los usuarios finales. Sí, uno va a un vendedor que justamente ofrece esa capacidad y nos piden se incluye el IPv6 y él va a decir, ¿y cuánto me vas a pagar? Porque va a ser mucho más caro como para tener esas funcionalidades o y las vendemos a tal cantidad. Bien, pues entonces el usuario dirá, pues no vamos a pagar por ello porque no merece la pena. Entonces, tenemos que tener en cuenta que se debe justificar la inversión que tienen que hacer los usuarios. Bien, ya no hay más prolongaciones. Este es el privilegio del presidente. ¿Pueden ustedes seguir tratando esa cuestión durante el almuerzo con sus compañeros, sus colegas? Ha sido muy satisfactorio que tantos sus oradores hayan intervenido. Muchas gracias también a todos los que han estado aquí presentes. Y bien, Potumi del gobierno coreano ha publicado un artículo muy interesante en un periódico coreano con respecto a esta cuestión y concluye que todos somos responsables de que realmente se despliegue el IPv6. Se trata de una cooperación entre los diferentes interlocutores que hacen que Internet funcione como una red interoperable y global. Esa es nuestra misión. Pues gracias a todos.
The presentation will be placed on the ICANN Paris meeting presentation website as well as at large.
Las presentaciones en efecto se publicarán, se colgarán en la página web de esta reunión, al igual que en el sitio web de ICANN. Si quieren también pueden en efecto darme su tarjeta de visita y se la haremos llegar por internet también, por correo electrónico.